the event or activity that you can expect to go well without consciously planting some seeds starting this afternoon doesn't exist. Okay? I'm trying to get you there. It's a kind of emptiness. Okay? It is a kind of emptiness. The person who hurt you in the past this morning, who wasn't your fault, never existed. And the event or activity that you're hoping will go well this week also doesn't exist. There's no such thing. Okay? You're wasting your time worrying about it or thinking about it or being concerned about it because it doesn't exist. There's no such thing. Only those events which you plant seeds for are going to happen. Okay? The rest are Maumba Makiwe Chishen. Maumba Makiwe Chishen means a future thing that's not going to happen. It's a joke in the Abhidharma. Okay? Future thing that has no odds of occurring. Okay? I don't know how to get you there. It's two kinds of emptiness. They're not going to happen. An event that you hope is going to go well without doing something now to plant some seeds and then some heavy coffee meditation, then that's just, what do you call it? Gambling. You know, that's just, you're hoping for good luck. And the other one is, what do you call it? It's kind of designed. You're designing the success of the upcoming thing. That one exists. That meaning exists. And you don't have to worry about that meeting. You don't have to spend much time being concerned about whether it's going to go well or not, because it will. It has to. Okay? Then your life changes, and you're not worried about the chances of success of something you're trying to do in your life, and you're not remembering hurt that you had in the past. So you're basically stuck in the present with enjoying the present, you see. And especially when you do coffee meditation, okay? Then the coffee meditation will come easily because you have nothing in the past to be angry about and there's nothing in the future to worry about. So you might as well do your coffee meditation. You see what I mean? Rather than struggling not to think about the past or the future. The past doesn't exist. Those objects in the past don't exist. The ones in the future don't exist. So when you lay your head down on your pillow, you don't have anything else to think about. Okay? Try to... We go around the world trying to tell people this. And I can see in a crowd, I can watch a crowd... I can't see all the faces. There's 1,000 faces, but I can see like 50 or something. And then I look at them and I say, how many people are getting it? You know, how many people are going to be happy? You know, and you can see that a light turns on in people's eyes. The ones who get it and the other ones don't get it. And then you're just like, okay, you know. There's nothing in the future to worry about because it doesn't exist. Something that might happen well, might go well or not, might not go well, doesn't exist if you plant seeds. And someone who hurt you in the past that you can remember to be thinking about, they don't exist either. So it's just phantoms, okay? They're just... I don't know. Huh? Yeah, they're phantasmas. Yeah, there's nothing there. They're not there. And the whole world gets old and gets tired worrying about those things that aren't there. It's sad. If there were something there to worry about, then the suffering of the world would somehow be okay. But there's nothing there. It's like everyone's running full speed across the camp to escape from snakes that aren't there. And the whole world is doing that, you know. It would be okay if there were some snakes. But there aren't any. And all these people are running away from the snake, you know. It's just a bunch of ropes, right? On the ground. I don't know. It's very frustrating for me as I go around the world. It's extremely frustrating to to talk someplace and then leave that place and know I won't be back for a year. And those people will run for another year, you know, and they'll worry for another year. And try to get it, okay? Those things are not there. What's the sign that you have the wrong attitude about them?
You're upset.
Yeah, you're either upset or any kind of negative emotion is a barometer that you're thinking the wrong way. It's a wrong thing. Anytime you're not happy, you're wrong thinking. Okay? So that gives you a measurement. What do you call it? Litmus stick, huh?
Barometer.
Yeah, a barometer of where you're at. If you can feel upset, you don't have correct view. Okay? And if you feel resentful towards anybody, hatred towards anybody, you also have a wrong view. Which means anytime you're not playing music or dancing, then you're probably doing something wrong. I want you to try to feel that feeling, okay? I like it here because we did do a little music and dance. I felt like we were doing the right thing, you know. Okay. Spending our day well. Okay, here we go. It's been occurring to me this week that it would be kind of nice to live like this. You know? I don't know. Probably Elisa's too busy to stay here forever. But, you know, you also probably have to pay the camp something. All right. He was talking about how even with common... I love that example. Even with making a chair or something like that, you have to learn how to use the tools by watching somebody and painting something or sculpting something, but much less with the most difficult task that a human being has to do, which is getting enlightened, which is equals happiness, being happy. Okay, I don't know. Sometimes it might be better to think of it that way. Like, I'm struggling to be enlightened is a big deal. But if you say, I'm just trying to be happy all day, it's the same thing. Okay, it's the same thing. Okay, it's a struggle, right? It's a difficult task. It's the hardest thing to do is to be happy all day. It's like having a vacation which is restful is almost impossible. You know, we gotta get them, you know. Okay. Then he said, you can't learn these things from the internet, right? You can, we are designing 200 shows for YouTube. We already put in a grant request with somebody in Beijing in like a 10-year project, you know, 200 YouTube videos for learning Tibetan and learning how to use the books and, you know, but it doesn't replace a human being. You need a human being. The videos are good to get you started, and then you should switch over to a human being. There's a difference between the two. So he's going to give an example. Perna dine gyagar tabur joetse. Yeah. Perna means what?
Example.
Yeah, for example. Pecha means a what? A book. And pe means something printed. And the Russian for to print something is pechat. It's kind of weird. Okay, anyway. Pecha. Anyway, I thought it was funny. Perna dine gyagar tabur doetse. So, for example, if you want to go from here to India, okay, if you hope to go from here to India, then he says, sa ken shi nge pa tsal ge. Sa means what? Earth. Ken means a knower. Like, I don't know. Anyone who knows. Ken, it's not the same as kepa. Kepa, that's ken. Different spelling. This is no yatak. Ken. Ken means someone who does that thing. Like, Droken is someone who is going. What do you say? You say in... There's a word in Chinese, like 清德人, daren, at the end of a sentence means the person who is blah blah blah, right? Daren, it's like that. Yeah, Ken, someone who's doing that thing. In Chinese, it comes at the end, and it's a clause. The person who is doing that thing. In Tibetan, it's Ken. Ken means the person who's doing the thing that's in front of that. So Sarken means an earth Ken, an earther. What's that mean? A guide, someone who knows the land. Okay. If you want to go from Tibet to India, you need a Sarken. Okay. Shik Ngepa Tselgo, you have to look for one. Then, you know, Prabhupada Rinpoche was a high tantric teacher also. And he was one of the greatest masters of the Vajrayogini practice, Angel of Diamond practice in history. And he wrote the best commentary on it. And we translated it and we studied it in the 7-year program at Diamond Mountain. So he was a great Vajrayogini master. His student, Tridhar Rinpoche, was also a master of that practice, that tantra. And then his student was our teacher. So I don't think he can teach Lam Rim without throwing in accidental or purposeful allusions to higher practices. And we've seen that a few times, right? This is one also. And I just wonder if anyone who was at Diamond Mountain for this 7-year course remembers anything about somebody helping you to go to India and to the Indian Ocean. Oh, yeah. Synapses are trying to fire. Do you remember?
Was that the way that you explain emptiness?
Yeah, there's two ways to explain emptiness. Yeah, wow, who said that? God bless you. Directly and indirectly, okay? And that's a very, very, very profound teaching. If you want to, because Tibetans never saw the ocean. They didn't have an ocean. And they had all these myths about the ocean. All jewels come from the ocean. If you can get to the ocean, you can pick up emeralds and rubies and diamonds, you know, because they all come from the ocean, you know. And but they never saw an ocean. Because they're landlocked, right, by the Himalayas. So if you want to go to the Indian Ocean, you need a guide. And there's two ways you can understand the ocean. One is called direct, and one is called indirect. And the ocean in this case is emptiness, or high tantric realizations. Someone could sit down to you and say, the ocean is blue. It's like the Lake Kokonor in Tibet, or Lake Manasarovar, right? What do you call it? Manasarovar? It's a big lake. It's bigger than that. Like, you can't see to the end of it. It's all blue, and there's fish, big fish, and if you go far enough, you can go to other countries. And, you know, you can explain to a person in Tibet what the ocean looks like. That's called a direct explanation of emptiness, okay? Or you can give them directions to the ocean. You can say, okay, try to get to Kathmandu, okay? You go through that path, and you meet all these people speaking some other language, then turn left, you know, and then, you know, walk for 2 months. You hit this big river. That's not the ocean. That's the Ganges. Then follow the bank, you know. And then you'll see this big, big thing. That's the ocean. And then the person gets a backpack and they start walking to Kathmandu, right? That's, you know, confusingly, that's called the indirect method of seeing emptiness, okay? It was always confusing to me because that guy really sees the ocean by the time he gets to the end. But it means the guy, rather than describing the ocean to you, the person gives you instructions, and then indirectly you get to the ocean and you see it yourself. So the teachings on the inner body of yoga, the teachings of yoga, all the chakras, all the channels, how to do yoga, how to do dance. Dance is a big subject in the monasteries. a sacred dance and how to think as you dance is a big subject and beautiful subject. And then you teach someone those rivers. You know, you tell them, go down that river and follow that river, meaning your inner channels, and follow the prana that way. And then you'll get to emptiness, you see? Then you'll have a perception of emptiness because the prana can trigger that. The correct practice of yoga or dance can trigger deep spiritual realizations. You see? And that's called the indirect method. So when they teach it in Tantra, they call it the trip to India. You see? So here we are. Accidentally, he threw in the trip to India. Why is he talking about a trip to India? Oh, you need a sakhan. You need someone who knows the land, okay? Trying to go to India without some instructions from a guide is suicide, right? Okay. Even in nowadays. Okay, all right, ready? Okay, got it? It's very beautiful. It's a reference to the practice of yoga and dance in the inner body, okay? Deyang Kang Chungi Mi Chokpar. You can't just take off and hope you'll get there. Ngar Dronyong Wasok. You have to find someone who's been there before. Dronyong means they have experienced going there. Okay? Someone who's been there before. This gyu is interesting. Okay? I want you to learn it, those of you trying to learn Tibetan. So there's RGYU, which means cause. There's RGYUD, which means or your santana, mental stream. And there's BRGYUD, which means a lineage, okay? Bergyud. But then this is spelled differently from all of them. And this gyu means acquainted with, okay? So if you don't pronounce Tibetan correctly, it's hopeless, okay? One is gyu, one is gyu, and one is gyu. Okay, one is cut short, gyu, and you close your throat at the last minute, gyu. That's a D, gyu. Then one is longer, gyu, and you say it longer, gyu. That's this one. Are you familiar with? Are you acquainted with? And then gyu, without either cutting or lengthening, is a cause. Okay, that means a cause. So if your Tibetan gets good, you should be able to hear the difference. If someone just says a single word with no context, gyu means what? Gyu. No, lineage. Gyu. That's a cause. Gyu. That's acquainted with. Okay, and you have to learn to hear it. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, RGYU is cause. And it's neutral. It's not cut short and it's not lengthened. Gyu. Like gyunde means cause and effect. Gyu, cut short, means any kind of a stream. It can mean tantra, it can mean mental stream, and with a B in front of it, it can mean lineage, okay? Lineage, lamas, gyu, okay? And then gyu, lengthened, is to be used to something or to be acquainted with something, okay? In the old days, they were all pronounced. The suffix letters were all pronounced. And in the rural areas of Tibet, of the Tibetan language, they still pronounce them. So it sounds very uneducated to a person who's learned Tibetan outside of Tibet, but it's more correct. So in Ladakh or in Mongolia, they would say Shen dik drok sa sok sa kang chung la ten na lam ji tar par mi chi shing lok par sa. They pronounce everything. Okay? They actually pronounce it correctly. Because they never heard that it changed. Usually language moves the fastest in the middle of a country, in the large cities. And then the rural places catch up a few centuries later. Okay? Okay. Yeah. Right, yeah. And with the B in front of it, it changes to tradition or lineage. Okay, so here it means you need someone who is gyu with the path to India. Gyu. someone who's acquainted, they've been there before. Like you, you, Chigla. You need some water? I have tea? I have some tea? Okay, sorry. Good, but you have to rely on them. Notice he's used a BRTEN, those of you who care, Britain, okay? He didn't use the one that means to rely on a doctor. He's being more general. You will have to find someone who knows the way. Gopa Shindu. Lam Tun Kenki Gary Shinyan Deyan Sangi Kidribin Lam Der Chitu Bashi Gu. You will also need a spiritual guide who is acquainted with the path to enlightenment and can who is able to guide you on that path. Okay. Shen Dikdrok So Kanjun Latena. You shouldn't just hook up with anybody you meet, okay? Your spiritual real estate is precious, okay? Your soul, your mind is a very valuable thing. And you shouldn't expose it lightly to teachings or to people's ideas, or you should be selective about who you expose your heart to, because you don't have much time. You should try to be wise in your selection of who you listen to or who you choose, what books you read, for example. You should be careful. Try to choose ones that are very meaningful. If we go to a film, try to choose one that is meaningful. And it doesn't mean you can't have fun. I mean, if you're tired and you just did a 10-day retreat and you need a break, then go see a stupid movie and relax. And that's an important part of spiritual life also. It is. It really is. But in general, choose the classics. Choose things that are important. Choose things that will help your mind. I don't read any other books, frankly. I don't read any other books. So once in a while I'll read a science fiction book because that's higher than Dharma. But if a book hasn't been around for 1,000 years or so, I don't waste my time on it. Okay. So don't give me... Okay, anyway. They just end up in my bathroom and then I have to drag them to Goodwill. Dhammadi Kalche. Dikdok we talked about. Chodok and Dikdok we talked about. Chopo means friend, right? What's a Chodok? Yeah, someone who influences you in a wholesome way. And a Dikdok is the opposite, okay? Dikdoks, there's a joke in Tibet. How do you recognize a Dikdok? Like a bad friend, you know, who will screw up your life. And they don't have horns. You know, like they're not like that, and they have a tail with, you know, they don't have this tail and fangs, and you know, they're usually very reasonable. They're super reasonable. They're like, you know, why do you waste 10 days going to Prescott? You know, I mean, really, I mean, 3 days would have been enough, and you could have, you know, helped at your work, and you know, they sound very reasonable. They're not like evil. If they were evil, it would be easier. They're reasonable, okay? And then you want to do something that's a little bit beyond reasonable, and they talk you out of it. They're like, you know, you went already the last time, 10 days. I mean, it's expensive and takes a lot of your time, and wouldn't it be more reasonable to just, you know, focus on, you know, your job for a couple of days. You know what I mean? Like that. They don't say, go kill somebody or something like that. But they kill you. They kill you worse than that. Okay? Okay, that's a dick joke. So, Kong Jung Latena, if you just take any kind of friend that comes along, Lang Jitawar Mi Jishing, they won't be able to lead you on the path correctly. Lokpa Chulwar Gyawa Yimbe, you will go astray. Tokma Shenyan Temba Di Gelche. Therefore, at the beginning of spiritual career, you have to find a teacher. And I'm not saying it's me. I'm saying I'm just the one who's telling you you need a teacher. Then you have to find your teacher, okay? I'm happy to be your heart teacher if you want, but you might do better with somebody else. So each person's different. Each person has a different personality. And you should find your soulmate lama. You know, you should keep going until you find the one that fits you perfectly, you know. Until you find one, I'm happy to substitute. Or, you know, I'm happy to entertain requests. But I'm not trying to sell myself. What I'm saying is you have to find your heart lama. Somewhere, somehow, you have to find your particular heart lama. You must find, okay? That's worth your life. Tomo Shinyin Tenpa De Kelche. Very important. Jey Rinpoche Kyang. So, Jetsun Kapa also refers to your heart teacher as Lamki Tsawa. It's the root of the whole path. That's the basis of the whole path. Lamki Tsawa. Sumba, Ne Che. Ne. Now you can tell me Ne. Crucial. It's crucial. Ne Che means it wasn't a mistake that he uses the word root of the path for teacher. He doesn't call it teacher. He calls it root of the path. Okay? Jetsun Kapa. Dela Toma Shenyen Tenbe Tsula Shi. So, hey, we're finally at, you know, a good Galupa division. That means we're starting the real thing. Okay? So here we go. Here's how to find a teacher and how to follow them properly. Dela Toma Tsula Shi. Shi means there's four parts to how to take a teacher. Number one, Tenbe Penyin. Think about all the cool stuff that's going to happen if you find one and it works out. If the relationship works out successfully, think of all the cool stuff that's going to happen. Number two, Matemba Dan Tenso Lopa Nimik. Think about how bad it sucks if you don't find one. Or if you find one and you don't treat them properly. Okay, he lumps that together. Okay, he puts them together. Either you don't find one, or you find one and you don't relate to them properly. Okay, number three, Sambe Tenso, how to relate to your teacher in your own mind, in your own thoughts. Okay, and then Jorwe Tenso means how do you relate to them physically? You know, how do you, what kind of, logistically, how do you relate to them? Outside, in your actions, okay, as opposed to your thoughts. Number three is how to think about them. Number four is how to serve them, okay? Okay. And that, you know, Americans have a resistance to the idea of service of a teacher. And it probably comes from our democratic principles that you shouldn't be a servant, we should all be equal. But if the teacher is somebody special, and if they're doing wonderful things, if they are serving the world, then to serve them is a great honor and a privilege and a pleasure, and you grow constantly by serving them. And I did it for 25 years. And I washed dishes for 8 years. And you know, I was a dishwasher for 8 years, and I'm proud of it. And that's why I can teach you these things. That's why I understand all these things. Because I wash the dishes. And that's part of, I guess in dance it's the same, right? You have to sweep the floors and open the place and close the place and straighten up. And it's the people who attach to the master and do the dirty work at the dance studio who end up being the great dancers, you know? So anyway, to do all that, you're going to have to consider carefully the benefits. In Buddhism, you never undertake a practice without a sales job. So the Lama has to do a sales job. And you're not supposed to follow a practice unless they can sell it to you. You're not supposed to just do it because they said so. You're supposed to say, prove to me that this is worth doing. prove to me that this is worth my time. And then they have to give you like 10 reasons why this is going to help you. And then you're supposed to say, all right, that sounds okay. You know, you're not just supposed to do stuff because they told you to. Because you can get in trouble that way, right? It should be logical. It should make sense. If they can't explain to you why you should do something, you should say, I love you, but I'm going to wait till I'm convinced. Okay? Like that. That's a Buddhist, that's how Buddhists approach their teacher. Okay. Penyun dhammatembe nyimik means, they should also be able to convince you of how bad it's going to be if you don't buy this car. Okay? They should do a sales job. On one hand, they should tell you how great it's going to be if you take it, the car. But they should also be able to tell you how bad it's going to be if you have to walk. You know, they should sell it to you positively and also negatively. And Gershing, De samna de la temba troshuk chewachun. If you are convinced, if the person takes the time to explain to you why this is a useful religious practice, then you'll be happy to do it. You know, if they sell you well enough on the idea, then while you're washing the dishes, because you want to save humanity, you'll wash them happily. Okay? And if they don't explain it to you before and they just say wash dishes, then you'll probably get resentful after a while and you'll quit. Okay? So it's important in Buddhism that the teacher presents logical reasons why a practice is going to be helpful for you and for all those you love. Okay? Okay, here we go. So what are we going to do first? The benefits. I have to do a sales job. Okay? I have to sell you on the idea of having your own... What's that guy in Karate Kid, the Japanese? Miyagi. You need a Mr. Miyagi. Okay? Now I'm trying to convince you why you need a Mr. Miyagi. Who's the guy in the Star Wars movies? Yeah, you need a Yoda. You need a wise old somebody to tell you deeper stuff. Everybody needs one. You should have your own Yoda or Mr. Miyagi. Okay. Who's the one in Kung Fu Panda? Huh? Shifu. Shifu. Okay. It's probably a Japanese word, but okay, they stuck it in there. Dambo shenyin tembe penyin lang. Here are the benefits to having a Mr. Miyagi in your life. Nyurlam le sungbe. He's going to quote, Quick Path, which is a Lam Rim. It's a different Lam Rim text, okay? Le sungbe lame sungyun tar kupa. So I'm going to teach it to you from that other Lam Rim, the Quick Path. With according to the oral tradition and as it has come down to me, said Pabongkor Rinpoche. Okay. Gopa. And there are such a ge. There are 8 parts to the outline. Okay, there are 8 points. What do you call them? Well, they call them on a business proposal or something. There are 8 bullet points, okay, to why you need a Mr. Miyagi in your life. Okay. There are 8 bullet points. All right. Yeah. De Dumbo. Here's the first one. Sangeki kopanga nyewa lang lame damba temba. Ramsi. The first classic one is that it will bring you closer to enlightenment. If you have a Mr. Miyagi in your life, it will bring you closer to enlightenment. Okay. Why is enlightenment useful? No, you can help more people. Okay, you can be ultimate help to countless beings. A person who's enlightened can serve billions of creatures at the same time. That's cool. And you want it. Deep down, it's better than sex or music or ice cream. Deep down, you want to save the world. That's the deepest human desire. And you can get it. If you have a Mr. Miyagi. Okay, saying Gopana, Nyamalang. Lama Dhamma Temba Rangi, the Lama teaches you what to do, and then you do it. And that brings you closer to enlightenment. That's how the Lama brings you closer to enlightenment. Okay, Lama Cheching Nyen Korwe. If you Lama Che, which can be shortened to, oh no, Lama Chipa, right? That's what we're going to do tomorrow. Okay, duh. If you make offerings to your Lama, okay. If it doesn't mean money, okay. Usually Lama doesn't need money because they understand karma and they can make money. They don't need your money. You know. They understand how to plant money. They want what from you? They want you to practice. They want you to get enlightened because they need colleagues. They need more help. Not working for them, but opening their own franchise. Okay. Lama Chöching Nyen Korwe. Nyen Korwe means to respect your teacher. And that's a big deal, and we'll talk about it again and again. It's not an American thing. In fact, in America, I think almost the opposite is valued. The independent junior officer is always the hero in the movie who goes against his superior's wishes and saves the ship or something like that. Brash, irreverent hero is our one of our ideals in America. But in this tradition and in this lineage, they are your ticket to gaining the skills to help other people, save other people's lives. So you just kind of in a place with them that you, it's an affectionate awe, okay? And it's never short or complainy or whiny or disrespectful. That's totally the opposite, okay? Okay, Lama Cheching Nyen. And you should develop that, and it's a very beautiful thing. And they have it. There are many problems in Tibetan monasteries, but they know how to respect our teachers. And it's very beautiful. It's a very wonderful atmosphere to be in. Nyen Korwe. You can really divide it into two parts. Number one, if the Lama teaches you and you do what they say, you will get closer to enlightenment. Or if you make offerings to your Lama and respect them, you will get closer to enlightenment. So Pabongka Rinpoche's own teacher, Dakpo Lama Rinpoche, divided it that way into two. Closer to enlightenment means if you do what they teach you, you get closer to enlightenment, A. B, if you respect them properly, if you have this affectionate, what do you call that? Huh? It's an affectionate respect for someone who knows a lot. And yeah, it's kind of like that. It means, I don't know, it's like you want to learn to play piano really well, and there's a master, there's a real master. And so there's a mixture in your feeling towards them. If you become their student, there's a mixture of affection for them, and then there's a mixture of respect for what they know how to do, like a awe of... It's not really devotion. It's like you're like in awe of how well they play piano, and you also. But it's not a cold. There are cold students. They just want to know how to play piano, and they could care less if the piano teacher has a stroke. They're like gone the next day. They find another one who can still play. You know, not like that. It has to be both. Find a master, and then have this. Loving relationship with them. That's best. Okay. Okay. Sache ni sachene tipa dakikam. So that's a tradition that he learned from his own Lama. So you can tell his thoughts are on his own Lama, right? He's talking about how his Lama taught him how to behave towards the Lama. It's kind of cool. Okay. We'll stop in about, I don't know, let's give it like 5 more minutes, then we'll take a break. And then we'll do some questions afterwards, okay? Dela tamoni chira sangha kukopana niwa yang shenyen tembe penyin te. So here's the first one. What was the first one? Yeah, if you listen to their instructions and carry them out, then you'll get closer to enlightenment. Niwa yang shenyen tembe penyin te. Lam shen la gelchan changme du dumar jubgope salam nam. There are spiritual paths which you can practice, which can take many lifetimes for you to reach your goal. Okay? He says, Kelchen Tongme, countless eons. And how long is an eon in Buddhism? It's not that. That's the next word here. Tongme means 10 to the 60th power. That's how many great eons you'll have to take. A great eon is not defined in scripture. If you study the Abhidharma, fourth chapter, they have a wonderful presentation of time and space. I tried to sell it to a physicist recently, but he didn't buy it. But what you call a kalpa, or an eon in Buddhism, is measured in a very odd way. It's a cycle of 80, with 80 sine curves on it, and it depends on the time it takes for a planet to grow oceans and then creatures and then evolution into humans and then until they blow themselves up with a weapon of fire that covers the earth. That's Abhidharma, third chapter. Okay. And then it starts over again. Like a few people survive. Okay. And then it starts over again. So 80 of those. Is a kalpa. Then times 10 to the 60th power. So if you practice some spiritual path, it could take you that long. But if you had a good teacher, say chik la drutu, say chik, one lifetime, in your lifetime, what would take many eons, you could do in one lifetime if you have a good teacher. Okay, if you have a good teacher. After the explosion of the weapon that covers the world with fire, the earth gets vaporized in a few zillion years by the sun, the local sun supernovas. That's in the Abhidhamma Krishna. Okay. That's what I want to teach in April. I want to start teaching that in April. I've never taught it. It's very beautiful. Okay. Su shin chepa means if you relate properly to that lama, it can take you only a single life. Okay. Le chung nak lame ki nyerke kyang lame nyerke ki sok tu chepa le chuma. This is a beautiful thing, and then we'll take a break. What's nak? Tantra, okay? Literally, it's mantra, right? The translation of the Sanskrit word mantra is ngak. Ngak, low-tone ngak, means speech, okay? Ngak, with an accent on it, high tone, means mantra, enlightened speech. So ngak is what we do. Ngak is what Buddhas do, okay? Are you ngaking or are you ngaking? Okay. Yeah, sung is honorific. Okay, so ngak means tantra. What's lame mean? Lame. An-uttara. An-uttara. Yeah, no higher. An means not. Uttara means higher. Okay, like uttanasana. So an-uttara means nothing higher. And Americans say anuttara or something like that. Anuttara or something like that. Okay, anuttara. Anuttara tantra, which is the highest of all tantras. There are four classes of tantra, and anuttara is the highest. Okay. Why does anuttara tantra work so fast? Why can it change you into an angel in a single lifetime? Nyorke lame nyantra. Yeah. The practice of serving your teacher is the sok. What's sok? Srok. No, that's sok. Sok. Sok means life, okay? What is it in Sanskrit? Ayus, okay? And then before the word Veda, which means the science of, S is required to change to R. So it becomes Ayurveda, okay? The study of this, of the life, okay? So Sok. Sok means life. In scripture, life means, I don't know how to say it. It's the thing inside of Anuttara Yoga that allows it to be so powerful that you can get enlightened in a single lifetime. Huh? I don't know. The Tibetan word is, it's the life. Like inside of a tree trunk, there's a core of juice that keeps the tree alive. And proper service of your teacher is that for Tantra. What do you call it? I don't know. Inner lifetime juice thing. We don't have a word, I don't think. But in Tibetan, it means the life inside a thing. Yeah. Say again? No, Arolika is a different thing. That's an interesting thing. Okay, that's a different thing. It's not Ayur, yeah. It's Arolika. I don't know, you find a word. It means inner core lifetime essential juice thing. Okay, that makes the thing work. And if the tree doesn't have it, it dies. Okay. What do you call it? You could say life force, yeah. The life force of high tantric practice is honoring your teacher. And that's the only way you can, that's the only reason it can work to get you enlightened in one lifetime. Okay. And then he gives an example. Namtar means normally moksha, but as I said the other day, it also means biography. And he says, do you see the last line? Can you go to J. Midla? What's that, J. Midla? Huh? Say it fast. Mila. Yeah, Milarepa. Okay. It's his brief name. We say Lord Mila, but it's short for Milarepa. So this is great yogi in Tibet, the most famous meditator in Tibetan history. Okay. And who was his teacher? See, his teacher was a beer-guzzling Tibetan businessman, not a monk. And who went to India and learned the high teachings, okay? And then their relationship was very stormy. And but he stuck it out. Milarepa stuck it out. And Marpa gave him lots of very difficult tasks, like to build a 9-story tower by carrying the stones like the pyramids. You know, and then after he built it, he said, oh, that sucks, you, it's all crooked, you know, and that tower is still there. I mean, it's big, and it, you know, and then he just berated him after he spent all that time and worked so hard, and then Marpa was like, God, I wish I had a student who could build one that was straight. You know, who'd want to stay in that, you know? So, but anyway, he mastered Tantra with Marpa because he trusted him and he just did what he said and it worked out. Okay? So he's giving an example of Milarepa for the juice in the tree idea. Okay? All right then. Let's pause there. We'll take a break. Okay? Okay, we'll start. So we're going to hand that thing out tonight.
Today.
Oh, yeah?
I think
let's do it tonight. I think night's better energy for that. Yeah. Okay. Just one announcement, then we'll do questions for... We don't have a lot of time, 15 minutes. There's a tradition in the monastery called Ne Lama. Ne means the place where you stay. Lama means Lama. So in the monk's vows, you are required to have a Ne Lama, which means a big brother in the monastery. So like my Ne Lama taught me to put my robes on, which was really difficult. And they fall down for the first 3 days. It's a lot of spectacle. And they teach you everything. They teach you all the practical stuff. And then they keep their eye on you in case you get in trouble. Okay? If you have a crisis, like if you get sick in the monastery, your Ne Lama takes care of you. And if you have a mental crisis, they take care of you. It's a lot like a sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? Do you know that system? Like, someone will tell you, I'll be your Ne Lama, I'll be your sponsor. And then if it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you feel like taking a drink, you can call them and they will come. They'll come to your house and they'll take care of you. You know, and I think that's why that's the most successful program in the United States. So Ne Lama is very similar. So at Diamond Mountain, I don't know, eight years ago or something, I asked everyone to try to choose a Ne Lama, that they should choose an older student that they felt could be there. We have a buddy system. I used to surf a lot. My parents wouldn't let us surf without somebody else with us. And that's if the board hits your head and you go unconscious. Someone has to pull you out within 2 minutes or you die. And it happened 3 or 4 times in my life. And somebody had to pull somebody out. And so we had a buddy system. We weren't allowed to go surfing unless somebody else also went with us. And I think it should be that way spiritually. Then, I don't know, we got lazy about it. And we stopped talking about it and we stopped requiring it. So I don't, in the monastery, it's totally required. You can't be in the monastery unless you have a Ne Lama. You gotta have an emergency backup, you know. So I would like to encourage you to get a Ne Lama, okay? And it means an older, maybe more experienced person in this room who's almost like a peer. They're almost like a fellow student, but they're a little more experienced. And if you have a crisis, you can telephone them or you can email them and you can say, I'm having a crisis. You know, my husband walked out today, or the doctor just told me I have cancer, or I'm going cuckoo in my meditations. And then It's a wonderful custom to have a, what do you call it, emergency backup. So I'd ask, and I like to have those names. I like to know who your Ne Lama is. You don't have to tell anybody who's your Ne Lama. It's not required, even in the monastery. And you can switch Ne Lamas. If it's not working out, you can switch in 5 minutes. It doesn't matter. If you find one that you feel will be better for you, then you can switch, and it's no big deal. It's everyone's like, okay, cool, that's fine. You switch. So it's not your root lama, right? It's not your heart lama. It's like a mentor or a emergency backup person. So I encourage you. We have like 24 hours left. I encourage you to think about it, and don't be shy. You can ask someone if they'd like to be your Ne Lama, okay? I kind of encouraged my students not to take more than, how many was it? 10 or 12. I think it was 12. I asked them not to take more than 12 people to be their Ne Lama, because then it gets too spread out, you know? Because then 100 people ask me to be their Ne Lama, and I can't answer that many emails. I do have people for whom I am a Ne Lama. They usually live near me. They've moved there to be near me, and I take care of them when they have their crises. You know, usually they have to take me to dinner and I'll listen to them. But But I don't try to do more than 12. I don't do more than that. So I'm booked. But you can ask other people. But I encourage you not to take more than 12. And then, because it has to be that you're available at 2 o'clock in the morning when they're having a crisis, right? And you can't be that for more than 12 people, or you'll never get any sleep. Then you'll have a crisis. So I encourage you. And if you have a Nay Lama, I ask you to tell. If you don't mind telling me, it helps me. If you have a crisis that you can't speak, like if you get in a car accident or something, if I know who your Nay Lama is, I can talk to them about, you know, what are your practices. Then I can help you when you're unconscious or after you die. I can help. But it helps if I know who your Nay Lama is. So I'm asking if you don't mind telling me, tell Rebecca, and she'll keep a list. And we won't tell other people who's your Nay Lama. And then if you don't have a Nay Lama, I encourage you to ask someone here at the retreat or someone else that you trust. It also doesn't have to be a Buddhist, okay? I mean, it could be anybody that I know is taking care of you if when you have an emergency, okay? It just helps me to help you, okay? So think about it and don't be shy to ask someone to be your Nay Lama, okay? We couldn't work out a word for the Nay Lama is the person who's the Nay Lama, but what do we call the other person?
Nay-la-me.
Somebody said Nay Lama, I don't know. Is that's after 10 years I don't know what to call this person. The victim or I don't know. Carrie?
Twelve step programs they call it the
Pigeon. Pigeon. I don't know if I like that. I'm open to it. If someone can think of a sweet word. Huh? Budgie? Okay, anyway, let's open to questions. Maybe tonight somebody can come up with some suggestions for what we call the person who has the Nay Lama. Okay. All right, let's do this thing. Bridget, are you on there? Bhungi Drishi Nathantam Ri Ramishi Ninde Gembani Sangye Shindu Ninde Uwani Nogu Nanda Shina Jubasho Inam Guru Radha Nada Naya Dayami Dike Vokun Sanam Yeshe Satoshi Sanam Yeshe Lechum